This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a highly acclaimed and beloved actress who's been dazzling audiences her entire life. We first saw her as the Kellogg's girl doing commercials for Corn Flakes, Sugar Smacks, and Rice Krispies. At the age of 9, she played Robert Wagner's sister in Love and War. And a few years later, she played Violet on the classic TV series Leave It to Beaver. And yes, she was the little girl who gave Beaver his first kiss. She also played Daniel Boone's daughter on The Daniel Boone Show. As a child, she also appeared in iconic movies like The Children's Hour, The Birds, and Spencer's Mountain. And she guest starred in numerous classic TV shows, including Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Danny Thomas Show, Route 66, Mannix, Family Affair, My Three Sons, and for all you Twilight Zone fanatics, our guest starred in the renowned season 3 episode, I Sing the Body Electric. And when our guest became an adult, her career went into overdrive. On the big screen, you've seen her in over 50 great movies, including Inserts, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Alien, The Right Stuff, False Identity, Kinsey, The Invasion, The Odd Way Home, The Field, The Ruse, and she's made 3 movies with Jack Nicholson, Going South, The Witches of Eastwick, and Man Trouble. On television, she's appeared in dozens of classic series, including Miami Vice, LA Law, ER, The X-Files, Chicago Hope, 6 Feet Under, Grey's Anatomy, Eastwick, Resurrection, Bosch, and most recently, A Man on the Inside, in which she co-stars with Ted Danson. At age 15, she won an Emmy Award for Best Actress in the TV movie Tell Me Not in Mournful Numbers. And she's appeared in dozens of other terrific TV movies and miniseries, including Who Has Seen the Wind, Prime Suspect, Robert Kennedy and His Times, Tanner 88, Hitler's Daughter, Lincoln and the War Within, The Lottery, The Rat Pack, and many more. And on the stage, our guest received rave reviews for her performances in The Hands of Its Enemy, The Triplet Collection, and Homesteaders, each of which earned her a Drama Logue Award for Best Actress. She's also won a Glitter Award for Best Supporting Actress for her performance in Straight Jacket. She won a Best Supporting Actress Award at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival for her performance in Barry Dingle. She won a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actress for her performance in Alien. And she's received 3 Emmy Award nominations for her extraordinary work in The X-Files and ER. I'm delighted to welcome the fabulous Veronica Cartwright to our show. Veronica, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. What an introduction. You were naming things that I'd forgotten I'd even done.
I dug deep because you've had that kind of career. And I have to tell you, we've had a lot of former child stars on our show, including your dear sister, Angela. And many of them have told me that the single most important factor in determining whether a child actor will successfully transition into adulthood is the way they were parented. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I do agree with that. As a matter of fact, when I did The Children's Hour, which was controversial at the time because it was Audrey Hepburn, Shirley MacLaine, and they played, there was a lesbian sort of theme. A lot of the parents pulled their kids out of movie. And my mother, we had taken sort of drama classes and musical theater stuff with these two guys, Frank Wyka and Bill Lockwood. So they became really great friends, and they helped, Frank actually helped me with, you know, like learning my lines for The Children's Hour and stuff like that. So then my mother says to me, oh, this is just like Frank and Bill, only two women. I thought, oh, well, that's okay then. So when I told the lie, I was really telling the lie because, I mean, it seemed perfectly normal for them. And so I think that had a lot to do with it. And they were great. They were always with us. My mom went and worked with my sister because she was on Danny Thomas Show. But my dad took off work when I did The Children's Hour so he could be with me. We always had my aunt, if I had to do location stuff, There was always somebody around. So I do agree with that. I think a lot of it has to do with the parents. And, I just love what I do. So I think that all came with that too. My sister decided to stop. She had worked constantly since she was like 4 and a half. And she said, "This is Veronica's job. Just let Veronica do the acting." So I did. I went and I went over to England. I studied with Jack Garfine, who was part of the original group theater. I studied with him for 3 years. And then I thought, well, I guess I better go and now that's the method. Now I'll go and do improvisational theater. And I worked with Stephen Book and Viola Spolin for 6 months. And then I went over to England and I was lucky enough to get inserts and started everything all over again.
It sure did. When Billy Mumy was on our show, he talked about how horrible he was treated by Alfred Hitchcock. But from what I understand, he treated you rather well. He even threw you a birthday party on the set when you turned 13, right?
Yes, he was wonderful to me. My first interview with him was in his bungalow, and my mother drove me there, and then I went in to see him, and he loved the fact that I was born in Bristol, England. That is where he stored his wine, and he proceeded to tell me some names of great wines, and I'm thinking, well, I'm 12. What do I do here? I didn't know I was supposed to write it down. I wish I had. And then he told me how to cook a steak. Because I would need to know how to do that when I got older and got married. And I've tried it and it works. It's pretty amazing. So he was great to me. And on the set, he was not intimidating at all. I could ask him any questions. And he always told me, like, why are the birds on the jungle gym? And some of them were fake. And well, wouldn't an audience notice that? And on the wires above. And he said, "Veronica, if your eye sees movement, you assume everything is alive." And to this day, you can watch that movie. I cannot pick out the fake birds. That's ridiculous. At the end of the movie, when I leave, there was no door. And I said, "Well, there's no door." And he goes, "If there was a door, dear, I wouldn't be able to see." So he says, "Let's show her, Rod." And so Rod Taylor reaches down and pantomimes opening the door, and he goes like this. And then that big door shadow crosses our face, and you assume there was a door there. He was incredible to me. I would have tea with him in the afternoon if we were on the Universal set. Peggy Robinson, his secretary, would come over with a china teapot and 2 cups of china cups and sit down, and we'd have biscuits and tea.
It's just fascinating. A number of years ago, you gave an extensive interview about the making of the birds, and it was really fascinating to hear about how realistic everything was. I mean, they even put bird seed in your hair so that big black bird
That
would.
was they did that to Tippy. They put with pieces of meat and bird seed on her face and stuff. So when the birds went in, they looked like they were grabbing flesh.
Well, was there ever a moment during the filming when you said, Mr. Hitchcock, I just can't do this?
No. And there were a couple of times that it was very strange. We shot it once in Bodega Bay, and then we shot it again in the studio. And he had a big, huge treadmill, a giant treadmill, and marionettes that would come down and swoop down. Well, that treadmill kept speeding up and speeding up. You knew you had to get to the front because if you didn't, if you went, then all of this, you were falling off into a gigantic mattress at the end. It was really. I'm sure today they'd be in trouble for doing that because I think there's a little sadistic thing going on there. Let's speed it up. We're running like crazy. We were like, and then you're like fall down and you're like bowling pins or just knocking off at the end. We kept doing that over and over again. And it was very creepy being in the, there was a huge bubble when the birds were coming down the chimney, and all of these 15,000 birds, I think it was, were in stacked up into this chimney. They were collecting them from all over the city. The city kind of got pissed off at them and told them they better stop because they were going into street signs and pulling birds out. And they were all in these like crates that, and then they would pull them. So of course the birds came down, they all fly around and go up and realize that there's a plastic ceiling and then drop like stones. And God, we had to keep doing that. That we had to shuffle. We shuffled. Jessica trod on one, and I'm with her, and she was beside herself, which made me beside myself. We were both hysterical, and we had to do that several times. So we learned to just sort of shuffle so we wouldn't step on any more birds. And our script supervisor created an entire aviary for birds to heal them. And oh my God, it was something.
It sounds traumatic, I gotta tell you. And what about Henry Fonda? What were your memories of working with him in Spencer's Mountain?
I mean, he seemed very nice. I mean, he wasn't really into kids, I don't think. He never sort of talked to us much. I mean, only when we were in the scenes. Maureen O'Hara, she was much friendlier. She was our mother. I mean, Henry just came in and did what he had to do, and then he'd leave. He seemed like he was a nice guy, but he wasn't really into us.
Well, you've worked with some of the greatest directors, not only Hitchcock, but William Wyler, Philip Kaufman, Ridley Scott, many others. Do you have a favorite director that you've worked with?
Well, Phil, I adore Phil. Phil Kaufman is just so wonderful because he's a real actor's director. He talks to you. He has, he knows what he wants and how to get it. And like the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I was walking around the block with Phil, and then he had gone and talked to Donald. And I really thought that he was going to be one of us, and then we would have a sequel. I mean, he was just like, that's why I was so tentative approaching him. And then all of a sudden, he did that scream. I mean, oh my God, it just came out that way. It was just, I was like angry and pissed off. And I don't know, that was the ending of the movie. But Phil was great because the way he talks to you about everything, I didn't quite know how it was going to end. But, and he lets you do things too. We were having real trouble with the scene about the monkeys and the apes and why do they have to come in spaceships and all of that. And it had to get to a certain crescendo. And I said to, and it was just taking hours, and I said, can I try something? I feel that if everybody's talking over each other, and Jeff is coming in and Brooke's coming in with their ideas, that that can get me to the point where I'm supposed to, finish off the scene. And he said, "Well, let's try it." And it worked. I mean, it's just but he, no intimidation whatsoever. He just trusted your instincts, and he's wonderful to work with. Ridley Scott gathered a great group of people. He was really more interested in the details and what the thing looked like. So our directions were much different, like when I come off of the spaceship and she doesn't want us to go back into the ship, and we've got, the body of the before the chest bursting scene, and he has that face hugger on his face. And so every time I went to slap her, she would duck. So after about three or four takes, my direction was, "Would you just fucking get her this time?" So I went like this, and she ducked, and I backhanded her. And oh my God, she was not a happy camper, but we got the scene done. She was furious after. She says, "Ripley would never cry. Ripley would never cry." But yeah, it brought tears to her face, and it should have, So, but those were our directions. Ripley would just, he would never really talk to us. We improved a lot of stuff. I mean, especially with like Yaphet Kotto and stuff. So, things like the thing in the breakfast area when we say something about what I want to eat, and he goes, "Well, I know what I want for breakfast." I mean, and it sort of set up a thing that we had been a couple, at one point. I mean, he allowed us to do those things, which made it really real.
It did. It
It
made it
just,
totally believable, very spontaneous, almost improv.
yes.
I have to ask you, of course, about the Daniel Boone show. After season two, all of us were totally mystified as to why you suddenly disappeared without any explanation. Is it true that your contract wasn't renewed because Patricia Blair, who played your mother, felt you made her look too old? Is that true?
Yep. Yes, it is. Because they were giving me boyfriends. And one of the boyfriends was Fabian. And of course, she was like 11 years older than me at the time.
Yes,
So
that was quite the kiss.
it was quite a kiss. I'd never had anybody stick their tongue down my throat before. And it was a 7 o'clock show. And they kept going, "No, Fabian, you can't do that. It's a 7 o'clock show." Well, it took him a few times to not do it, but
Well, I've got to say, Patricia Blair got her comeuppance because her career went nowhere after Daniel Boone.
I know she didn't work after Daniel Boone.
Well, I think in retrospect, they did you a favor to take you off the Daniel Boone show, Veronica, before you got typecast the way Darby Hinton did. Because when he was on the show, he talked about how tough it was to break away from that all-American boy image. So I'm glad you got away from there.
Well, it was an odd time. I was only 17. So I didn't work for a while because everybody thought I was too young to be, the older part. And you'd still have to have a teacher on the set and too young to be other part. So it was hard. It was hard.
But do you remember the first time you realized that you and Angela were famous?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I just, well, I don't know. Are we famous? I guess we are.
Oh, you and Angela were everybody's sweethearts. And I'm thinking maybe it was easier for you because you had a sister to share that with.
I guess, I mean, neither one of us were jealous of each other. We both did different things. I mean, Angela was on Danny Thomas' show for 7 years, and then she went on to do Make Room for Daddy and Lost in Space. I mean, she was just continually working. But what I was doing, I mean, for another thing, I was older than she was. So the only audition that we did together was for The Sound of Music. And I was up for the part that's of Louisa that Heather Urich got, or Heather Menzies at the time, and which was so odd. But the casting man asked, he said, "I'm sorry you didn't get this, but I have you in mind for something." And that was Daniel Boone. So they called over to Austria and had me come back from Austria to go and do the pilot in Utah. So my dad came back with me and our little brother. And then my aunt went with me to Utah so that I could do the pilot for Daniel Boone. So I guess everything does work out for a reason. I ended up going to, when I was about 19, I ended up going to some acting classes, and that's when I studied with Jack Garfine, who was part of the group. And I had gone over to Europe several, I was a waitress. I was a good waitress too. And one of the girls in the acting class said to me, "Well, you could go with," it was called Yellow Fingers at the time, and then it was later called Lafitte. So I would go over and I could be the hostess. And then people were coming in, so I started setting them up on the bar and setting people up at the bar, because at that point it was just wine and beer. And they thought that was so innovative, they gave me my whole section. And I got to Europe 3 times on the money that I made as a waitress. I loved it. I just thought it was great. And some nights I would decide I would be a different character and talk like I was French, and you pick up a few words here and there. Oh my God. I must say the gay guys just thought I was hysterical. They loved me.
I would have loved to have met you back then. But your first big break as an adult was the movie Inserts with Richard Dreyfuss.
And that is one of my trips over to Europe.
But
And
I
I went.
never understood why the movie was X-rated. Do you know why?
Well, because of the language. Well, John Byram, who is a doll to work with, that was like doing a play. We rehearsed for 3 weeks, and we filmed it in 14 days. But he said it was me and my split beaver. got it in next writing. But I think more it was, I don't know if it was, language. I think it was the first time. I mean, cunt is like part of the language in England now. Everybody's a, it's a sort of a thing of endearment over there. But at the time, to verbalize that was a no-no. So that's why it got an X rating. And then Richard fought for the NC-17, which it has now. But it was ridiculous. I mean,
Yeah, it really was.
ridiculous.
Now, your performance in The Invasion of the Body Snatchers was so spontaneous and in the moment that I kept wondering if you were being taken by surprise yourself in real life, especially at the end when we find out that Donald Sutherland has become a pod. Did you know that before you filmed that scene?
Well, that's what I was telling you with when I talked to Phil. He took me around the block and he told Donald one thing and he told me something entirely different. And he told me just to, approach him like I would. And when if you once you get to a certain point, if you think that he is, I didn't know he was going to be a pod. I just assumed after going up Matthew several times, and I kept looking at him, and I thought, oh, good, he's one of me. And then all of a sudden he did that. I flipped out. That was totally spontaneous. That movie was a really good movie, and it still holds up today, I think.
Oh, it's an amazing movie. Same with Alien. I'm not going to ask you a whole lot of questions about Alien because you've been asked everything. But I have to tell you, Veronica, in 2003, you and your fellow castmates and the director, Ridley Scott, won the DVD exclusive award for best audio commentary. It sounded like you had so much fun doing that commentary.
Yeah, well, I mean, Yoffit was there and
John
Harry was there.
Hurt.
Yeah, and John Hurt. And
Dan O'Bannon, Terry Rawlings, Ronald Shusett, Tom Skerritt, Harry Dean
yes.
Stanton, Sigourney Weaver, and of course the director and you. That was just, I tell you, for anybody who has not got the DVD of Alien, you've got to get it just to hear the commentary. And I thought the best part of it was what you had to say about that famous chestbuster scene. Was that the scariest experience you've ever had on a set?
Well, I didn't expect that I was leaning into a blood jet. I was so totally fascinated by this thing coming out of his shirt that I just leaned in. I didn't even know there were blood jets. So it was such a shock when I got that blood all over, and hence, oh my God. And I backed up and I hit the banquette and I flipped upside down and there were two cowboy boots sitting up in the back of the banquette. But I thought, oh my gosh, they're still shooting. So I rolled over and ran back in. So ridiculous. Ah,
Now, but
but
you've become so well known for your work in the science fiction genre and in horror movies, and you're especially good, in my opinion, at playing highly emotional characters, which work so well in those genres. Are you a fan of sci-fi and horror movies in your own life?
I guess I just saw Sinners. I love Sinners. I thought that was fantastic. It was like nothing I've ever seen before. And Michael B. Jordan is, it was nice to see two of him. He's so gorgeous. I thought that was fantastic. I'm going to go see it again. I saw it in IMAX and it was just outrageous.
So you're a fan, I can
I guess I'm
tell.
a fan of certain things. I mean, not all of it, not all of it, but I think they offer me these parts, and if they're good parts, I mean, if you think about it, in Alien, I was the one who said, let's get off of this ship. I mean, I was the one who kept trying to get people to, get their act together and do something. And the same thing with Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I knew how to survive, and I tried to express it, and nobody was listening to me. So,
Yeah, sometimes you're the voice of reason, but you're often a very emotional character. I have to say, in 1999, you played Sean Hayes' mother in a season two episode of Will and Grace called Homo for the Holidays. You were hilarious. You must have had a ball doing that.
it was so much fun. People keep saying that's the only one I did of them too. But people keep thinking I did two or three of them because it was so much stuff. And I replaced somebody, and I came in on a Monday and had a read-through with everybody. They took my measurements for wardrobe. On Tuesday morning, I went in. They gave me wardrobe. A lady followed me around because I had to learn all of the dialogue because we shot that night on Tuesday night.
You'd never know that you just did it at the last minute. It's so funny. And I don't
It
know
was
why
funny.
they didn't have you back.
I don't know either. I don't understand. At one point, they called and they thought I would be, because he kept talking to me apparently on the telephone, and they thought they would have him shaving his legs and me like on a computer talking to him. But then they said it wouldn't work. It didn't work, and I don't know why, but never had me back.
Well, over the years, I have to tell you, Veronica, you've played a lot of amazing characters who were real people. According to my research, in 1980, you played Marcy Jones, the wife of Jim Jones in Guyana Tragedy, the story of Jim Jones. In 1985, you played Ethel Kennedy in the TV miniseries Robert Kennedy and His Times. In 1998, you played Gary Cooper's wife, Rocky, in the Rat Pack. And in 2001, you played Olive Osman, the matriarch of the Osman family, in the TV movie Inside the Osmonds. How did you go about preparing to portray a real person?
And don't forget, there was Betty Grissom from The Right Stuff. For Betty, we got to see some footage. And I noticed when she got off of that helicopter, she had a straw purse with a flowers on it. And I thought, that's my character. I mean, who goes to see Jackie Kennedy with a what she thought was really tailored? And so I asked the and Phil said to the wardrobe lady, listen to her, she knows these characters. And so I said, I have to have that straw purse. So we tracked down a straw purse with the flowers on it. It's interesting, Marcy Jones. I did a whole bunch of research on Marcy for
The Jim Jones movie.
Jim Jones, the Guyana Tragedy. And I happened to be in San Francisco, and somebody said to me that I got a magazine from England. I don't know who sent it to me. I can't remember. But it was an actual breakdown of the entire last day. And it was just unbelievable. And I read all these books, and Marcy was part of the whole thing of the fabrication of pulling, the livers out of people, and she was supplying all that. She was supplying him with all of his drugs. He was a nut job at the end. And I found tons of stuff on her. And when I went to San Francisco, I went for a party for some friends of mine, and there was a man there who had taken pictures inside that room that was. Apparently, there were drawings on the walls of this place that pictured the entire thing in Guyana. And he took pictures of it. He sent them in to be developed, and they were all stolen. I mean, or for, that somebody in the government took them. So he never got them back. But he described a lot of what he saw in there. I did tons of research on it. And oh my God, what a frightening thing. And I must say, Powers was so incredible. He was just so unbelievable in that part. He became, at one point, I mean, we were shooting in Puerto Rico, and we were about 80 miles from San Juan, but in these places called the Condos by the Sea. So we stayed there, but they'd taken all of these people who had these little houses and moved them out someplace. I don't know where they sent these people, but all the furniture and all of the stuff was like what the people had. And at one point, Brenda Vaccaro did not like her room. She was, oh my God, she was hysterical. I mean, that the cast alone in that thing was just incredible. I mean, and she's crawling around outside going, those producers, they have a better place than we do. Why do we have to have this? And that, oh my God. Have you seen Nona's? She's hysterical in
I
Nona's.
just saw it. We had her on the show last year. She's hilarious. Have you ever met any of the people you played, like Mrs. Osmond or Ethel Kennedy or Rocky
Yes,
Cooper?
I did. Of the Osmonds, I met Olive Osmond. They all came in at the end, and Olive was there. They gave me brown contacts and a black wig. And yes, We got to meet all of the Osmonds because they were in the end of the show.
And what
And
about Ethel Kennedy?
no, I didn't meet Ethel. She was going through a lot of stuff, and they just felt it wasn't, a lot of the guys got to meet their counterparts. A lot of the astronauts, actual astronauts, came down. Chuck Yeager was there all the time. I did a lot of promo stuff with Chuck and Dennis Quaid, and oh God, it was a riot, that movie. That movie was so much fun. And the girls all would be in one group, and then the boys would be another, and they go play pool at this place called Tosca's, and opera music was always playing, and this was a favorite place of Phil's, and then all the women would get together, and we'd all go out drinking, and oh my God, it was insane. It was quite the party. But no, I never got to meet her, and I asked Phil about it, and Phil thought it was not a great idea. Because he died doing what he had requested. He did not break that hatch. I mean, everybody said, no, it was impossible. There were no burns on his hands. It just exploded. But he became the scapegoat because it was such an expensive project and it was drowned. I feel really bad for them. And I mean, he was still in there, but trying to undo the hatch, which wasn't an explosive hatch anymore. He had to crank it open and they burned to death in that
That's so
electrical
horrible.
fire. So there was a lawsuit going on for that. And so, no, I didn't get to meet her, but I thought that I did a good job with her.
And
And
I
that's
thought with the Olive Osmond role, Marie Osmond played her mother in a 1982 TV movie about the Osmond family called Side
Oh.
by Side, The True Story of the Osmonds. Were you influenced at all by her portrayal of her own mother?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, perfect. That's even better. Well, in 2004, you co-starred in a wonderful movie called Straitjacket, which is about
That
it's about a closeted gay actor in the 50s who marries a secretary to conceal his homosexuality. It's obviously based on Rock Hudson's life. You won a Glitter Award for your portrayal of the repressed lesbian ball-busting agent who comes up with the idea of the wedding. I'm dying to know, were you channeling anyone in that performance?
So we had this director, Richard Day, who was very much into these whole old movies. And everybody who was straight played a gay person, and everybody who was gay played a straight person. I mean, it was like we were switching roles, which was made it absolutely hysterical. But he kept telling me I'm like Roz Russell in one of those old movies where she talked a mile a minute and she couldn't, Oh my God, that one scene where we were walking around in a circle and we had the camera following us. Oh my God, faster, Veronica, faster. I mean, it was incredible. But she was just such a, oh my God, and the green mask. And then when they superimposed that golf course behind me, I thought that was hysterical. Oh my God. I thought the movie was just darling. I mean, it's a very, very funny movie.
It's a great movie. You made another movie of great interest to the gay community called My Brother's Keeper with John Lithgow about a
Nancy
man and his
Garth.
HIV positive twin brother take an
Right.
insurance company to court over a possibly life-saving bone marrow transplant. Is it important to you, Veronica, to take part in projects that have strong social justice messages?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's important, especially in this day and age. I mean, there's people that I can't believe with this new administration, they are pulling HIV programs and stuff like that were life-saving programs, and people no longer had to worry about it. I have dear friends that are gay. I mean, they have HIV, and medicines are, they're strong and healthy, and I mean, it's unbelievable. And now, between Musk and Trump, they're pulling these programs. I find that absolutely appalling. Pulling the US aid and all of these things that are, so important to so many people. I just don't get it.
Well, I'm glad that you have a social conscience because you do so much work. And some of these projects I've mentioned are very, very important. But I've got to, of course, I have to say, you made three movies with Jack Nicholson. Was he fun to work with?
Oh, he's a blast. He's just the best. He's absolutely the best. We were in Durango, Mexico, doing Going South. That was my first movie. But what happened was when I went on an interview to meet Jack for the, you know, and so I just sort of I dressed, I guess, in jeans and a shirt and stuff like that. So he comes out in his jean jacket, and it's a Paramount Studios, which the old part of the studio, the corridors were very tight. They were small. So Jack comes out and he goes, "Hi, I'm Jack." And I go, "Oh, hi." And as he says, "Come to my office." I am walking down, and as I'm walking down, he goes, "I loved you in Inserts." At which point, I went vermilion. And he goes, "Oh, I love a woman who blushes." I thought, "Oh my God." I was just, oh my God. I was, oh. So anyway, I went in and I talked to him, and we had a really great talk. And he took my picture and he put it on the board that he had there, and up there was dead Danny DeVito and Chris Lloyd and all of the Cuckoo's Nest people. And he put me up there and he said, "You're a member of my gang." And I thought, oh, so I was so excited when I left. And I called my agent and he says, "Oh, you know, these things that you have to wait and see whether any of it'll come true." I'll be damned if 2 months later they didn't call and say, "All right, you're going down to Durango, Mexico." It's such a ball. It was so great. Jack is just, he's just darling. He's a dream to work with. He's, you know, he's just, he directed that as well. And he's always there. He's always there. Like when we did Witches of Eastwick, I don't have that many scenes with him, but apparently he was the one who felt that Felicia was the fourth witch. And that she is the one that knows that he is the devil and just is trying to express it to these people. And so he has to make her wonky because she knows what's going on. So I go to the hotel. I did my audition actually in Boston. And George Miller and Richard Jenkins were there. And so the audition scenes were the snowy egret scene, where will they nest? And the last scene where you're throwing up. So I said to them, "Well, how far would you like me to go?" "Oh, we'd like to see it." I said, "Okay." So Richard Jenkins afterwards, he said, "When you left, because you were gagging, you were contained your lines, and you were like vomiting." He said, "We were like in shock. Everybody else had said, 'Oh, I'll do it on the day that we're doing,' but no, you just did it." And but I did not know that Jack had been the one who had recommended me until I was signing my contract. And George said to me, "You've got a huge fan in Jack Nicholson, and he's the one that suggested that we meet you."
How does
And
that feel when you know
oh,
that
it
an
was just.
icon, you are so beloved within the industry, and you are? I mean, do you even know that you have the singular distinction, Miss Veronica Cartwright, of having appeared in three movies that were selected for the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress? Did you know that?
No, you know, it was,
Those
is it
three
Right
movies,
Stuff?
The Birds, Alien,
Yeah.
and The Right Stuff.
And the Right Stuff.
I mean, how does it feel knowing that you've been part of so many timeless classic works of art?
I feel very fortunate. I am just thrilled that I have been a part of all of those things, you know, I just.
Well, and I have to mention another classic show you were in, The Twilight Zone. Of course, I'm referring to I Sing the Body Electric, which became one of the most famous episodes in the history of television. I want to know, when you're making a movie or a TV show, can you tell whether it's going to be a big hit?
I always thought that The Right Stuff deserved more than it got. And, you know, that to me was a brilliant adaptation. I think that Phil should have won the writing prize at the Oscars, because what he did with that movie was take Tom Wolfe's book, which was wonderful, and made everything into real dialogue and action, so that we actually recreated that book. I just thought it was amazing. And the whole experience, and the fact that real astronauts were coming in and doing things. I mean, And the group of people were just great. It was just, I don't know, it was like a big family. It was great.
But you were just a kid when you did Twilight Zone. Could you tell that we would all be watching it still now, 50 years later?
Well, I mean, it was written by Ray Bradbury, the only episode ever written by Ray Bradbury. And then he got pissed off and never worked for Rod Serling again because they were editing his work and he did not like that. And he was very pissed off because he did not like the episode because it cut out things. And Rod tried to explain to him that, well, it's a half-hour show, but we have to have commercials. He did not get that, and he said, "Nope, never doing it again." He was really angry. But what was so cool is Rod Serling would come in every week, and there he was. He would do the intro. And apparently he did it every week. And there he's sitting on his stool and he had his cigarette and he would, do his little spiel about the Twilight Zone. It was so cool. It was very cool. But I don't know. I didn't never thought of things as being iconic, but over the years, I mean, it really has become one of the ones they run it every October. And
Oh, it's absolutely iconic. There's another TV show. I don't know if you remember it, One Step Beyond. You got to work with the legendary Ronald Howard in an episode called The Haunting. I love that. Do you remember that?
yes, as a matter of fact, my aunt took me to the set, and he was British. And oh my God, my aunt just loved him. She just said, "Oh my gosh," she was so thrilled. I didn't know who the hell he was, but oh my God, she was beside herself because we're all British. And she just thought it was just beside herself that here she was with, I was working with him, So. It was very cool. It was great. I
So when
mean,
you watch yourself on screen as a child, what goes through your mind? Does it feel like it was somebody else?
I mean, I have never had a problem watching myself. I know it sounds so weird. It must be an ego thing. I get so involved in sometimes in some of the characters. I go through the same emotions that I went through at the time. It's very strange. It's like I'm not watching myself. It's like I'm watching somebody else, I guess.
That makes sense to me. I can see that. And I'm hoping that you and Angela, I know you've worked a couple of times together when you were kids, but is there any chance we'll ever see the two of you work together again now in a TV show or a movie?
I don't know. A couple of people have suggested we do Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, but I don't know that that would ever happen. There was like a little talk about that, but I don't know. I don't think that'll ever happen. But I have a movie coming out, well, actually Friday, the 16th, called The Ruse, which you had mentioned as one of the, so
Oh, I'm
that's
looking
like
forward to that. I mean, you've
a
had such an incredible life and career. Are you ever going to sit down and write a memoir?
I know everybody says I should. I'm not a real good writer. What I need to do is have somebody talk to me like you're talking to me, and then record it, and then they can go and write down some of the stories.
I'll be there tomorrow at 2:30. Oh, I would love to help you do that because you really, when I mean, listen to the people you've worked with, the projects you've worked on, you are part of the historical record, not only of classic Hollywood, but of the entire history of Hollywood from the time you were a child. I think you should do a memoir, and if it means that somebody should sit down with you and kind of drag it out of you, because the thing about you, Veronica, you love what you do. It jumps through the screen that you love what you do.
I do love what I do. I just, I just wish more work came my way,
That's going to happen. I mean, look at your work with Ted Danson in the latest one, Man on the Inside.
Thank you.
Everybody
Wasn't
loves
that?
that
That
show.
was so cute. It was so sweet. I had actually auditioned for the part that Margaret Avery got. She was black, obviously. I couldn't get that part, but it was one of the rare times that you had an actual in-person interview. I mean, I don't know. They want to do everything like, I have to do everything on tape. And it's so much better when you can go in and do something. And then the guys would throw things at me and say, "Here, try it this way." And so you did. And it was just so cool. So then when I left, I didn't get the part, but then I got this call that they wanted me to be the comic relief. They sent me over a script and it had two lines. And I said, "This only has two lines." "That's all right. Don't you worry about it. We're going to make you our comic relief." So I got to do five episodes. It was fun. That whole thing with Bless Me, Father. And I actually had somebody come up to me one day and they go, "Oh my gosh, you're Bless Me, Father, for I have sinned." Didn't know my name, but Bless Me, Father, for I have sinned.
It's a great little part. It's very memorable. You are part of the soundtrack of our lives visually, that's for sure. And I got to tell you, it's been such a pleasure meeting you, Veronica. Thank you for all the great performances, all the joy you've brought to your millions of fans all over the world. And most of all, thank you for taking the time to appear on our show.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You know, can I just say one other thing? Have you ever seen the movie Sparkler?
Yes.
Because that was another movie that the like Straitjacket, Sparkler. That was so much fun to do. And Sandy Martin, as she plays my partner. I mean, oh my God, what a hysterical movie. That was such a great little movie. So
It was a great movie for those people who haven't seen it. It is definitely worth the watch. Thank
thank
you
you.
so much for being on our show. Our guest has been the one and only Veronica Cartwright. For more information about Ms. Cartwright, please visit her official website, veronica-cartwright.com. My name's Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli of the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my editor, Isaiah Charalampadis, and my entire team at the XPTV One Network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.